Good afternoon, and welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. I am lucky to be joined by old friend, one of the sharpest football minds out there. He is the FPC Bengals managing editor, all around football mind, my guy Andy Hamill. Andy, good talking to you, my man.
You too, Biggs. I remember, like, to put some frame of reference on how long I've known you, I remember when the first time I would see your post on Twitter and you would share all the pictures of your son, he was probably 2 years old. I didn't know his name. I just called him Lil Biggs. I see the pictures now. He's like, he's got to be at least six. He's not little anymore. It makes me sad.
He's a man now, and he's a man who doesn't like football but loves ice cream. Meanwhile, his sister is one who just loves football and hates ice cream. But, yeah. Now, your Bengals, since I've known you, your Bengals have gone through quite the metamorphosis. They've gone from a Marvin Lewis team that could scratch into the playoffs but somehow always came up short to one of the hottest teams in the AFC. What has the culture change been like in Cincinnati?
I mean, I think it's definitely been – I mean, part of it up front is, like, the Bengals organization is still the organization in some fundamental ways. I mean, Zach Taylor was probably going to get an experience from ownership, the same way that Lewis did, where they were going to be patient with him, right? Like, this season couldn't have gone – it could have gone worse than it's gone. It's gone great. But I don't think he had to, like, put up or shut up this year or anything. I think a lot of the credit has to go to the free agent signings from this season. Because the thing is, like, the last Lewis team, like, Cincinnati drafts, keeps around veterans for a long period of time. Like, the last time the Bengals were in the playoffs, you had Andy Dalton, you had A.J. Green. Tyler Boyd might have still been there. But, I mean, there's not a whole lot of guys still went around. Clint Bowling, Carlos Dunlap. And now it's – I mean, part of it was drafting guys who come from winning teams, know how to win. Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase come to mind immediately. But this offseason particularly, I don't know how many teams had a free agency period as good as the Bengals did in regard to – going out, getting guys like Trey Hendrickson and Chidobe Awuzie specifically. Those two guys were absolute home runs. Like, Hendrickson, I don't know if nationally they get the recognition that they do in the Cincinnati fandom, but they would have gotten my vote for the All-Pro team. Like, Awuzie is, I think he's up there with A.J. Terrell for best cornerback seasons that not nearly enough people are talking about. I don't know if he's, you know, Terrell, I think, sets the standard for that one, but they have been great, just amazing. People talk Von Bell the same way. I shouldn't forget about him. But that's been, I think, it. Like, they have been led by players who just haven't been here and who've set a new standard for how to play on the field.
Now, one of the things I did notice, like, Zach Taylor was a quarterback mind. Now, he came in through the last vestiges of the Dalton regime. He had to deal with some things, and you have Joe Burrow. What do you think having a head coach who is a quarterback, I can't say the word guru, but a quarterback-minded individual does for a young quarterback like Burrow?
That's a good question. I mean, I can definitely tell, like, I don't have the words from Burrow's mouth on this or anything, but I know he's definitely gotten better as the season's progressed. I know, if you go back earlier in the season, the conversation about Burrow in week one, week two, when he's just getting back on the field after his ACL injury last year, the conversation is whether he still has the same ability, whether he can pick up his development from where it was or not substantially further back, not necessarily how far forward is he going to leap, right? Week one, I think he was fine. Week two, the game against the Bears, he had some good play, but there was a stretch where he turned the ball over like three times in almost like three consecutive plays. Like, it was really tough to watch. And he's just gotten, like, over the course of the season, he's gotten a lot better. I mean, everybody in the league knows, like, he's had one of the hottest stretches for the past like 5 weeks of the regular season since he had consecutive weeks, 400 yards, like how many touchdowns, no picks, like, guys don't do that. And part of it's just, to his credit, Zach Taylor went out and the Bengals went out and got him Ja'Marr Chase. And apparently, if you throw the ball to Ja'Marr Chase, like, bad things don't happen. But like, he's just progressed amazingly. It's been fun to watch.
Now, if we go into the backfield, you have a runner in Joe Mixon who has patience and power, and entering the season, he stacked 1,205 yards, but he also added 42 receptions. When you look at the Raiders, who have struggled with backs of the backfield because of linebacker issues, do you envision Burrow relying on Mixon in the passing game a little bit more than what he's accustomed to?
I think that one's a good question. Mixon is, as my writer Chris Erlsback will tell you in the preview article that I'm about to publish, Mixon's coming off the Bengals COVID reserve list. So I don't necessarily know how he's going to perform in this game. I don't know how close to 100% he's going to be. We've seen guys go in and out of that list and have varying levels of how close they are to 100% immediately. I think ideally Burrow can. He doesn't have to. I know the Bengals are plenty comfortable with putting Mixon on, I don't want to say a snap count, but they take him off the field and put on Samaje Perine or Chris Evans less frequently a lot. And they're not the same level of playmaker, but Perine catches enough passes. Like, they'll, whoever's back there, they're going to throw them the ball enough times. It's, I think, whether Mixon's there. Like, if it's Mixon, then that's more threatening, certainly, but they're going to do that regardless. So that's something I think the Raiders got to prepare for either way.
Now, going to the offensive line. Now, the offensive line to me is pretty much the only way that the Raiders have a serious shot at this game, because the Bengals offensive line, I want to say they gave up 55 sacks, and that is a lie. And it might be not the weak point. It might be one of the weaker points of the offense. How do you see the Bengals offensive line? You have Yannick Ngakoue and Max Crosby screaming from the outside. How would you attempt to handle those two?
That is a great question. I honestly, it's especially since they haven't been great all season, right? Like, it's a unit that I feel like most teams say they could do better on their offensive line. So I don't know how much comparatively, how much water that holds. But especially since midseason, Riley Reiff went down at right tackle, and they've been using Isaiah Prince for the most part in relief. Like, that's been rough to watch, especially against teams that have a good edge rusher coming off the left side. Like, against the Chiefs a few weeks ago, they had Isaiah Prince out there against Melvin Ingram, and he got whipped a lot. And Burrow was doing okay in spite of that, but the Bengals won the game in spite of that. But it's one thing when you're watching Burrow move up and down the field, but you're still seeing him, like, Chris Jones is getting to him, Melvin Ingram's getting to him, and you know they're not, there's not a whole lot they can do, because that's just the state of their right tackle situation. I definitely see the Raiders for this side. I know that's the side that Max Crosby likes to line up on, so that's, he's, you're going to be seeing him, like, I don't know how often he's going to get home, but that's something that you're going to be watching down in, down out, is how much pressure he can create, how much he can change what the Bengals are able to do on offense. That's a point of emphasis, certainly. I know off the other side, like, I think Jonah Williams has been fine, right? Like, I like him. It's not necessarily the same thing. I know on the inside, Quinton Spain went down in the Chiefs game, and the Bengals had to turn to Jackson Carmen, and that's another, not going to say area of strength, but it's definitely the headline of that group is, like, the Max Crosby matchup is the highlight. That's, if the Raiders win, it's going to be because Max Crosby has a day.
Now, if we go to the outside, is where the Bengals have the distinct advantage, where they can roll out three receivers and a tight end and C.J. Uzoma, that if they get blocking, this could be a long day for Vegas. Now, we know that Ja'Marr Chase has had a phenomenal rookie season. What do you like from Tyler Boyd? And a guy who I like, who doesn't get much time, but is actually productive as far as a downfield blocker, and Stanley Morgan Jr. is one of my favorites because he does the ugly work. He does the grit work. What do you like from the Bengals receivers that you think will afford them success tomorrow?
I definitely like, I mean, Ja'Marr Chase at this point, everybody knows what he's going to do because he's been on an incredibly hot stretch the past couple weeks. Like, he beat the Chiefs, you would think, from the box score on his own. Like, if I'm looking at the Bengals receivers, I'm looking at when the Raiders played the Chargers in Week 18 and they had to contain Keenan Allen and Mike Williams and the rest of that gang, and they get the Chargers to fourth and a billion miles, and it just didn't matter because Herbert could find somebody deep all the time. I think we could see a replay of that if Burrow gets protection, because Chase is open downfield regardless. I like Boyd. I like Stanley Morgan, definitely. I agree with you on that take. I think the guy who doesn't get credit enough for what he's done this season is T. Higgins. I mean, this is a guy who was drafted at the top of the second round a year ago. I think could have been a number one if the Bengals had simply forgotten to draft Chase and done something else. A couple weeks ago, or a few more than that, but before Ja'Marr Chase got really hot at the end of the season, he had a stretch of a few weeks where he couldn't find the keys to his car or something, and the offense had to go through T. Higgins. And especially when the Bengals were playing the Chargers game, this stuck out because you had Higgins' numbers right up against Mike Williams' numbers, who's like, it's the same profile of player. They went to the same school. The comparisons are easy to make. And Higgins, like, he made the same jump. I don't know if he's made the same jump to the point where Mike Williams is going to hit free agency and make $1 billion, right? But Higgins was not only playing to his size, he's 6'4", 215, close to 220, but he was doing it play in, play out, and he wasn't doing it in just the go downfield and box out some 5'9 cornerback way. He was doing it on, like, across the middle of the field on a variety of routes. I think that is a guy, like, he's been really, really good. Like, he hasn't been a 2 to Ja'Marr Chase. He's been a 1B to Ja'Marr Chase's 1A, right? He could be, if Ja'Marr Chase, like, rolls his ankle in the first quarter and can't play or something, I don't know if that's realistic, but, like, Higgins can be a guy that the offense can go through because the offense had to go through him, and they've won when they've gone through him. So I'm glad the Bengals have him. He makes them fun to watch.
Now, when we come back, I want to get into that Bengals defense, which, like you mentioned at the top, it is underrated, it is young, and it is hungry. But that's after we return. You're listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast, Terrence Bigg, Andy Hamill. Andy, I look at the Bengals defense. You mentioned Trey Hendrickson, and their front four, I mean, it is talented, it's young, and it's deep. Where do you see outside of Hendrickson, because you know he's going to provide just pass rush with 14 sacks, he gets home. Where do you see a major advantage for the Bengals on that side of the ball up front?
Honestly, I don't dislike any of them. I mean, Hendrickson's been the most productive guy. He's been really good. There was a time in the season where we were just stretching. We were tracking how many consecutive weeks Hendricks had would finish a game with one sack, and he had one sack through like 13 games consecutively in the middle of the season. He didn't get to Patrick Mahomes. That was Chiefs game at the end of the season, ended that streak. But aside from Hendrickson, I mean, Sam Hubbard's a guy where if Hendrickson creates pressure, Hubbard can get through his blocker and get home. Like, you can't run away from Hendrickson in the Hubbard and get away with it. In the middle, they've had guys who, against the right offensive lines, especially thinking back to week one against the Vikings, when the Vikings offense had like 8 or 9 penalties for false starts and holdings on center Garrett Bradbury, fullback CJ Ham. Like, that interior had a rough time against the interior for the Bengals of DJ Reader, Larry Ogunjobi, BJ Hill. It's a curious snap count thing they have going on, because a lot of the times you'll see all three of them on the field, even though the Bengals allegedly run a 4-3 defense. There are a lot. I mean, DJ Reader is, there are snaps you'll watch where, like, I'm thinking against the Broncos, where Melvin Gordon or Javonte Williams get a run, and it's like, if this is blocked up the way it looks like it's blocked up, they could take this the length of the field. And then DJ Reader just gets rid of a center and moves laterally and gets to a tackle that I don't know how a guy his size is able to make. So that's a big one. Ogunjobi and Hill are athletic enough where they can create a power rush against guards who give them a chance to do that. So, I mean, if there's a Raiders offensive lineman that we're thinking, like, we're working about how to cover up, like, he's not playing well, that guy might have a rough time regardless. Because, I mean, those guys are all athletic and they can all do it. Like, they're all good.
I think for me, one of the interesting ones is Sam Hubbard, because here's a guy, former high school safety, grew into his size at Ohio State, but had the ability to, he has really good feet. And you would think, being the complimentary end, that he wouldn't, he would just be there just to kind of clean up, but his footwork is exceptional. Facing a tackle in Brandon Parker, whose footwork isn't exceptional, I think that Hubbard could have a big game, because Parker hasn't shown the ability to stay with anyone on a consistent basis without holding them. And we know that Hendricks is a known. Hubbard is a guy that the Bengals, they roll the dice. They think they gave him, what, $40 million? But it's well worth it. He is an excellent run stopper, but he's also a very good pass rusher. He's a complete end.
Yeah, no, I see that. I mean, I know for both sides of that, I've seen the criticisms of Parker being like, I mean, part of it's just for a guy Parker's height, like, it can be hard to stay with a guy who has good leverage on him and can get under him, get around him. I get it. Hubbard, I know, he's a guy, I mean, the Bengals like him, and it's surprising that for a guy drafted third round however many years ago, it's like, one, that he fell that far, I guess, just not being at a high, like, being at Ohio State, I don't know if he's a senior, maybe he's just older. He's 23, I think, when he came out, so he's just not a big fanfare guy, but like, he's been productive. I mean, he's not – there aren't a whole lot of guys around from that era of the Bengals defense even that are still there. It's like the guy who was at the other side at the time, Carl Lawson, he's gone. He's went to the Jets. Jordan Willis around the same time has been gone. It's Hubbard's still there. I mean, there's a reason he's still there. Like, he's productive regardless of his assignment. Especially, I mean, footwork stuff. Like, he's mobile, dude.
I mean, for me, one of my favorite – Bengals, and my favorite one, I watched this guy play in college. He was a ball hawk there. He made plays in coverage. He was a tackle machine. Logan Wilson. Logan Wilson is a problem, because you don't expect a linebacker of his size to be able to, one, move that quickly, two, possess such soft hands, and three, have the speed to get down the field, either make the tackle or with the ball, be able to house one. What do you think having such stout in the interior with Ogunjobi, with Hill, with Reader, that does to free up a guy like Logan Wilson?
Honestly, it's like those guys do a great job freeing up Logan Wilson, but it's like I'm going to just give the linebackers some credit on their own. It wasn't too long ago that one of the biggest criticisms of the Bengals defense from people in the know was they had linebackers back there who Ray Maluga, Vincent Ray, Preston Smith, like the last time they were in the playoffs and making noise, it's like those were not guys who were known for their ability to, who were like, they weren't the pass coverage guys that Logan Wilson is. Like, that was something where if we had to face an athletic tight end or an athletic running back and we had to stick somebody one-on-one on them, like, the Bengals were just going to lose. And it wasn't really something where we thought about it too much. It's just, it was going to be a rough day for whoever got that assignment. Logan Wilson can take that assignment. Like, there was a time earlier in the season, he had, I believe it was two interceptions against the Steelers. He had a very interesting box score. It's like, he's through week three of the season, he had, I think, three interceptions, a whole lot of tackles. It's like, if this guy keeps up this pace, like, who knows what awards he's going to be up for. I mean, he doesn't keep up that pace because that's not realistic, right? Like, he's not going to finish the season with however many interceptions that would have been. But, I mean, him, Akeem Davis, Guider, it's like, they made a point in the draft where they got Burrow. It's like they got younger and more athletic at linebacker, and that's something they've talked about doing, or beat writers have talked about they should do for a while, but they actually went and did it, and the results are on the field. It's like Logan Wilson, I mean, that's a good question, because it's like there are not a lot of guys who, looking at what the Raiders have in Darren Waller, especially, where I'm comfortable taking one player and – saying that's a man-on-man assignment and we're going to have a good time. And between the Bengals, it's like we got Logan Wilson, we got go to the back. I'm sure we'll talk about him later, but Jesse Bates is like, I'm not going to say like they're going to shut him down or anything, you know, arrogant like that, but it's like they have enough defensive pieces where it's at least a competition.
One of the guys that, you know, of that linebacker core is Jermaine Pratt, the guy from NC State. Like, he is another fast guy who, another former safety that actually grew into his, you know, into his frame and flies around the ball. Where I like what Pratt did this season because he dropped the number of missed tackles, and at the same time, he was able to increase his number of total tackles, which means took better angles, got a little sharper. Like you mentioned Jesse Bates, if we switch to the defensive backfield, Bates is a guy that, like you mentioned, a lot of guys on this Bengal team, no one talks about. Bates is a guy that has been not just steady, but excellent. Does a little bit of everything well, from the ability to pick off the ball, 10 career picks, but he also will force a couple of fumbles, tackles well. This is because the Bengals have added so much talent in front of him. This is his first season that he didn't tally over 100 tackles. And I don't think he minds because his team is making the playoffs. Like, the less tackles he makes, the better off they are. Where do you see him playing against a quarterback in Carr where, if you're honest, the Raiders have one vertical threat in Deshaun Jackson, who they don't really feature, and they will see a lot of Hunter Renfro?
I definitely, if that's like the Raiders plan to attack on offense, if they're not a big vertical offense, I mean, I know Deshaun Jackson's on the roster. I can't say I remember the last time I saw him do a whole lot for him, but yeah, no, I mean, if Bates is free to play, like if the Bengals can do cover one and Bates can sit in the middle of the field and we're not going to be worried about anybody who's fast on the outside putting him in a position where he can't win, then that's a good situation for Bates to be in. I definitely don't know if that game plan holds up with the Bengals' entire defensive backfield. I know that's something that works well. That would lend itself well to Bates. That would lend itself well to Bell. That would lend itself well to Chido Bawuzie, who I know, I'm sure you'll ask, but it's that's good for Bates. Like, if we don't have to stick him on, like, stretching him over multiple assignments, going vertical, if he can see everything in front of him and he can come down and make plays, then he's going to have a good time.
Now, you mentioned Chidobe Awuzie. Came up from the Cowboys, and he really seems that he has found his home with the Bengals. What do you see the difference in how he played in Dallas versus how his first year in Cincinnati was?
I think my big question is why Dallas would have let him go, because it's like, he's young, he's really good. I mean, look, maybe they had to, okay? Like, that's, you know, not for me to say. They don't pay me to make those decisions. But the biggest...
going on, guys?
The most impressive thing I've seen from Chido Bawuzie, I think, is if you go back to the Bengals and the Chiefs game, where it ends up looking like a shootout in the box score, the Bengals win in some really highlight fashion, you would think the Chiefs got a whole lot of production out of Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce like they normally do. One, they didn't, but two, if you look at Tyreek Hill, not only did he finish the game with a very low number for what we're seeing from him in terms of receptions and receiving yards. But Chido Bawuzie finished, he led the Bengals in tackles. He finished with 10 solo tackles. It's not just that Patrick Mahomes couldn't find Tyreek Hill on the little short bits that they all like to do, but it's when they did them, Chido Bawuzie saw it and he was there and he tackled and the play was over. He's great at doing that. He's also great, if you go back to earlier in the season when the Bengals were playing the Packers, there was a time when Davante Adams ran a double move on Chido Bawuzie. Bawuzie doesn't bite. Aaron Rodgers throws it anyway. Not only does Bawuzie keep coverage, but he makes a pick. And it's like, wow, this guy's the best cornerback the Bengals have had since I don't know. He's certainly, like, he's the best corner on the roster now by a mile. Because, I mean, between him and Mike Hilton, who's more of a slot guy, and Eli Apple, who is not you see more you notice more bad plays from him than great ones. I mean, I don't he's great. He is holding, like, him and Bates are amazing to have in the secondary.
Now, if the Bengals go on and win and they move to the next round, they have eclipsed the Marvin Lewis era. They have, as far as being able to win, for that fan base, what does, because I remember the Bengals being bad for the balance of the 90s and just being terrible. And then Carson Palmer comes, they have success, then injury happens. What does a win tomorrow mean for the psyche of that fan base?
I definitely think it's if there's one thing I've gotten to know since I took the assignment of covering the Bengals back in 2017, it's that the fans of the team aren't what I'm used to seeing from teams like, I don't know, the Steelers, or having grown up as a Bears fan, Packers fans. It's like there's not a whole lot of arrogant Bengals fans in the world. There's not a whole lot of Bengals fans who think their team is the best team on earth, that they should beat anybody, that they're always better than they are. It's, if anything, they're very self-deprecating. They're very, like, their expectations are medium, low, they're humble. Like, seeing what I've seen from Bengals fans out there in the world this season is, it's been different. Like, they're amped, they're energized, they're rallying behind guys like Joe Burrow especially. It's like, he's a very easy guy to cheer for, a very easy guy to like. He's got swag. Like, fans love winning, and they love when they're winning with a guy like that, that makes winning more fun. Like, there's, aside from just Bengals fans, I've seen in places where I know to look for Bengals fans, it's like, I'm out here, like, I'll go on Instagram and see people from high school who are posting photos of themselves at the Bengals stadium. It's like, I live in Virginia. I didn't know you were a Bengals fan ever. When did this happen? And it's because they're winning. It's because now people care. It's because now they've got people's attention. Like, they probably always were, you know? But that's what this season has done to the team. It's, they're fun. And a playoff win makes them, of course, more fun. You have, they have actually brought an energy out of the fan base that I don't know the last time it would have been there. I mean, it's like they had other teams go to the playoffs, right? But it's not, the fans weren't coming out like this in 2015. They weren't coming out like this in 2011 when they were getting into like a six seed wild card behind the Steelers and Ravens. I mean, this season, like, I don't want to say like they've already accomplished a whole lot, but whether they win or lose on Saturday, like, the Bengals, they've already done a whole lot with how they've performed this season. If they win, they're just going to, I don't know, man. It'll be fun.
No.
I think the Bengals, I should say, Bengals fans, like, they, the expectations they've had of, like, they think they can win on Saturday, and they think this team can go further. They don't know how much further. Like, that's a vibe you, even the times they have gone to the playoffs while I've been following them, it's like, it's always tempered expectations. This season, they're all in. Like, they think this team can go anywhere.
Now, how can people interact with you on social media for their Bengals coverage?
Well, aside from every time I write an article about the Bengals, it goes out to Twitter under the Full Press Coverage account, same way yours does. I know my account on Twitter, at Andy_Hamill, I'll retweet my own Bengals stuff from there. My other writer for the team, Chris Railsback, you can find his. I tag him every time something goes out that he's written. That's mainly it right now. I mean, you know this, right? But
yes.
Until this season, I had been out in school and I wasn't really focused. Like, I actually stepped away from covering the Bengals and handed it off to another guy for a few years. So I'm still laying down all my roots and spreading out my network. But right now, if you want to see something I've written, Full Press Coverage on Twitter, that'll get it to you.
Man.
And hey, my personal account on Twitter, that'll get it to you too.
My man, Andy Hamill, Bengals managing editor for FPC Bengals. Thank you again for joining us on the Full Press Raiders podcast.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. This has been another episode of the Full Press Podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.